Hey everyone, welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Matt Straub. It is Tuesday, April 12th, and today we're going to be bringing you some of our favorite players to target in fantasy drafts as of April 2022 as we count down the days. With just over 2 weeks to go until the NFL draft, to break this down, I'm joined by Kyle Dvorchik and Denny Carter. Guys, before we get started, I just wanted to kind of get oriented in terms of where we are in the fantasy offseason. Now, for anyone who... let's say we got someone who follows the NFL, thinks about fantasy year-round, but doesn't necessarily do a lot of drafting in, let's say, April. Where are we in the year-round draft calendar? Help me get calibrated. Are you guys doing a lot of drafts already? Where are we? Where am I? What year is it? I'm confused. Someone help me.
I guess I'll offer this. I haven't done much drafting at all because I am enamored with, Matt, this is for you,
yes.
NBA. I suddenly can't get enough. Of course, I'm keeping tabs on you know, fluctuating ADPs and whatnot. But as far as drafting goes, not much on my end.
Doing a little bit of drafting. Now is a pretty good time, especially for like rookie values. Even like I think Underdog probably has generally the sharpest drafters. Other best ball platforms, I feel like, are a little more beatable. But even the ADPs on Underdog, and right now they don't have like their biggest tournaments up yet. But even in just like, especially this is probably where the biggest edges are, frankly, in like the standard 12 man leagues. No tournament, just 12 man. You make 9 extra money or whatever for winning your league. The rookie ADPs are just still bad. Every single year we do this where like have to wait to find out where we get drafted. Like, well, we can tell by a certain player's profile, like what type of workload they'll see. It could come with, come with the Jaguars, or it could come with the Chiefs. Obviously that will change things, but I still think that is such an edge that we have yet to iron out year in, year out.
And that's a little foreshadowing for one of your guys, Kyle, but
a little bit,
Before we get into it, Denny, what are we doing? Are we doing NBA DFS? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, man. Qualifiers, tournaments, whatever. Like I'm in, and I want to tell you, and I want to tell the listeners, watch out for my Clippers.
Okay.
All right. My Clippers have a head of steam coming in here. They're gonna mow down the Wolves. No chance for the Timberwolves. Clippers going into this thing. They're all going all the way to the finals. That's my analysis for the Western Conference.
You came here for football knowledge, but you came away with a little basketball knowledge. It's a beautiful thing. All right, Denny, along these lines, so we've each picked three players. These are guys that we are drafting in actuality or hypothetically right now, aggressively, in our April drafts. So we've each got three. We're going to go around the room here. Denny, lead things off for us. Player number one for you is
Allen G. Robinson the fourth. I don't actually know if that's his full name, but Allen Robinson, signed, of course, by the LA Rams after a not so great stint in Chicago. Who could have seen that coming, by the way? A bad Bears receiver signing. So here's the thing about Robinson, and rightfully so, people have a bad taste in their mouths, right? After, you know, there were a fair amount of people, including myself, who thought, okay, just target volume wise, he has to be the guy in Chicago. Turns out he wasn't. But there were many mitigating factors, one of which Allen Robinson got COVID in around midseason, missed a game or two, came back. He said later that it was several weeks before he could get up to game strength, to his former strength, lost a lot of weight. And that has played a huge factor. There's also the coaching in Chicago,
a little bit,
not the best. I don't know if you've heard, Matt Nagy is not the best play caller. They seemed very uninterested in involving Allen Robinson in the passing game. So I'm willing to kind of turn a blind eye toward that and say, you know, he's in a way better offense now. And here's the thing about the Stafford-centric Rams offense. It's way different, obviously, than the Jared Goff Rams offense, where Robert Woods really was ideal for the Jared Cook offense. He did the end arounds, he did all the blocking, he did all the little gutty stuff that you need the gadgety stuff that you need to make Jared Goff work as a starter in the NFL. You don't need that with Stafford. Stafford's a legit quarterback, even no matter what the haters say, who can feed his main weapons And with OBJ likely not coming back to LA, Robinson takes on that role.
Yeah, that's one thing that I thought was really interesting. Is like it seemed like almost a lock that Odell Beckham, I don't know if would take a discount, but would see himself best fit as just returning to the Rams, things working out quite well there. Now it seems like, I don't know if I'd say there's a real market for it, but at least it looks like teams are sort of all in the running as opposed to just penciling him in to return to the Rams. And that could really open up. I was thinking, you know, oh, Allen Robinson, he returns. Originally, I don't think they had traded Robert Woods yet. So I was like, oh, you know, maybe a 2-3. And they trade Robert Woods. I'm like, well, they're just bringing Odell Beckham back. The more and more we go on, the longer we wait, the less likely it looks that Odell Beckham comes back. If he were coming back for sure, at least, probably would have happened almost at the start of free agency or maybe just after some further medical testing, something like that. That's not the case. So we really have a decent shot at Allen Robinson stepping into a ton of targets under all the awesome conditions you just described.
Yeah. And also, you know, OBJ from week 12 to 18 last year had a 20% target share and a 28% air yard share. That air yard share was just slightly behind Cooper Kupp for the team lead. So there's a lot there for Robinson to absorb. You know, I think just by default, he should be a value at wide receiver 34 coming off the draft board right now.
He's still 28 years old, got $30 million guaranteed from the Rams. And like, if nothing else, I mean, even if his ADP starts to go up, those numbers from last year are going to keep it down, I think, in a lot of leagues. 38 catches, 410 yards and one touchdown after 102 catches, 1,250 yards and six touchdowns the year before. So do we have an ADP on Allen Robinson in front of us? Like, where are we ballpark right now, Denny?
End of the seventh round in 12 team leagues, wide receiver 34, which is just, if you look at some of the guys going ahead of Robinson, I don't know. My guys like, Darnell Mooney's going before him. I don't know if I'm doing that. Brandon Ayuk is going before him.
Suspicious.
Nah, no way. I'm never going Ayuk over Robinson.
Hard stop. Never going Ayuk. No, I'm just kidding. But I am taking a year off on Ayuk, I think.
Just a little Brandon Ayuk sabbatical. We'll come back in a year or so, but just, you know, take a breather. Let our relationships mature elsewhere.
Exactly. Kyle, bring us your first guy. Who do you want to bring to the table first here?
First one, Leonard Fournette. Like, I for the longest time was not a Leonard Fournette guy. He's big, slow, lumbering. Many people even called him Fat Lenny. I'm sure I did at some point. He is, in fact, not that. He is, even at that time, but now especially, he looks like a supreme athlete, and he is getting the work of a bell cow running back. They bring him back on the three-year, $21 million deal. It's not an incredible amount of money, but they're not doing the thing they did last offseason where they bring all 22 back, right? They actually have holes to fill, and they don't have, you know, loads of draft capital at this point because they, you know, finished well. They don't have a ton of draft picks. So they're not going to be spending at running back. What they have right now, I think they brought Gio back, as if that matters. He was phased out of the offense anyways. And Keyshawn Vaughn, that's it. Obviously, they lost Ronald Jones. And last year, with Ronald Jones in tow, they had Leonard Fournette still number six in games with 20 PPR points. One of only six backs with 30-point games. That's PPR point games. Multiple 30-point PPR games. He led all running backs in targets per game. Was the only running back to have more than one target per game in the red zone. And he was dominating the backfield work as well. And that was with Ronald Jones, who's probably at least a good between the tackles banger, that home run hitter style. They don't even have that guy. I guess that has to fall on Keyshawn Vaughn's shoulders. And they do not like Keyshawn Vaughn. We're going to see at least the workload from last year that led him to being an elite fantasy option, if not possibly more. And that's on a Bucs offense that was second in overall points per game. I get it. They pass a lot. But when you have so much of the share of the pie as Leonard Fournette does, like, I'm like shocked. I think it's just like a stinky name brand value. People were down on Leonard Fournette for like probably ever since his second year in Jacksonville. It's been a while, but like, he has been nothing but excellent and a workhorse back over the past year, plus the playoff run before that.
I've lost a lot of money betting against Leonard Fournette over the past 2 years. And I'm done doing that. I'm with Kyle. I concede. Uncle Lenny has beaten me and into submission. Look, you know, being the every down back behind Tom Brady is just incredibly valuable because Brady puts his running backs in great position with the on-field management, with audible calling. Mm-hmm. We know Fournette is going to be the likely short yardage and goal line back in an offense that scores a lot. You know, the new coaching staff is talking up running the ball, establishing the run a little bit. I'm not saying that that's definitely going to happen, but it can't hurt. I don't think it can hurt Lenny. So I am with you. I can see Lenny is a fantastic fantasy option.
But Denny, by the way, Tom Brady did retire, just FYI.
A second time?
He retired.
Again?
No, just the one. As for Leonard Fournette, did we mention his ADP yet? Because the most recent one I saw on Underdog was 77. Is that possible?
That was RB25 as well. And I saw RB21 on another site. It seems like right around RB23 range. That's like insane. That really does seem to have the fear of a running back being drafted in like the second or third round baked in. And I really can't see them making that that committal, especially when they have probably already like three running backs set to be on the roster, right? I don't think they...
There have been reports. We have at least two blurbs that somebody here has written, say that
I was going to say, give me their name.
Yeah, it's me that says it. You know, Tampa could be in the market for a second round running back. Maybe Kenneth Walker. This is something that's been, linked in press reports. That would be a situation for Fournette.
I think that's the only logical reason you could, but like to me, drafting him at RB25, you've already penciled them in to take a second or third round running back. And I don't even know if I think Kenneth Walker would be there at the end of their second round spot. So I feel like they'd probably be looking at either a different running back, and I think there's a tier gap after Walker, or even deeper into the third or fourth round, at which point I become less and less scared. So to me, RB25, 21, anything that's outside of the top 20 really almost is already penciling in a running back there. And I think he should probably if you just run the numbers, he projects as like a top five running back. He probably shouldn't be there because there is a legitimate threat of them taking running back. I don't think it's very likely, but if it happens, it's very much not good. That's why you don't draft him as a top five or like eight running back. To me, that's not why you choose to not draft him at RB19, 20, 21.
Yeah, agreed. And my first guy is also a running back, and that's Javonte Williams. And it's a different story here in terms of ADP, and I do want to get you guys' thoughts on that in a second. But first, just the talent and opportunity. We saw a glimpse, obviously, of just how dominant he could be. Week 13 last year when Melvin Gordon was out, 29 touches, 178 total yards, including 78 receiving yards with a touchdown. Looks like Gordon is on his way out of town at the moment. Obviously, that would clear the way for a likely monster workload for Javonte Williams. But I guess I would ask you, we can go to you first, Kyle. Do you think Javonte is worth what looks to be right now something in the range of a second round pick? Because there is no secret here when it comes to Javonte Williams right now. And that would be my only hesitation in kind of going all in on this one. So I want you guys' thoughts on this one, basically.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's probably close to efficient pricing, because at that point you're looking at almost similarly drafted, like workhorse running backs, right? And if they're not workhorses, it's like Austin Eckler or Aaron Jones, who sure, they don't get 80% of their running back carries, but they do so much in the passing game that it offsets it and they still get their goal line work. I think it's probably efficient pricing, maybe even slightly underpricing, because anytime you look at guys ahead of him, like a Dalvin Cook or an Alvin Kamara, just being older, we've seen running backs drop off just off cliffs out of nowhere. And last year, Alvin Kamara was less efficient running the ball. Maybe that was a sign of things come. Maybe not. I actually don't think it was, but we know these things happen fast. We know Javonte Williams isn't at his cliff yet. And much like, I talk about the Bucks, I just think after seeing what Javonte Williams did, they have a more talent-based reason to not draft another running back. We deserve to see 250 carries, 50 targets at a minimum for Javonte Williams. I think that's probably the most likely outcome. I think that's roughly priced in, though. I don't who are the running backs going right ahead of him? Probably some of the, Dalvin Cook is probably going 6-7 picks ahead of him, maybe.
Well, I have him going RB9. Is that too low?
No, see, I think that's about fair. Like, I'm not taking him ahead of like Jonathan Taylor, Christian McCaffrey, stuff like that. But as soon as you move into tier two, I think he's probably the back end of tier two, because we just have less of a sample size on him. But it's perfectly fine to say, like, if you call him a top five running back, like, yeah, you could slot him in at RB5. He was so incredibly efficient last year. And that tracks with what he did in college, too. He broke PFF's like elusiveness rating and broken tackles metrics in college. And you're thinking, well, how much of that can translate? You know, he's playing, I think, ACC competition or something, right? No, he immediately looks just as impossible to bring down in the NFL. Obviously, some of that scales back the more work you give him. But like, he kind of has like that sort of year in, year out insane efficiency potential of like an Alvin Kamara, or maybe even more on the lines of like a Jonathan Taylor or something like that, where you every week you're like, well, he can't break off another 40-yard run, right? And he does.
He was, speaking of the elusive rating, he was PFF's fifth most elusive back last year. He was tied for 10th in runs of more than 15 yards, despite the limited volume when Melvin Gordon
got half the backfield carries and did that. Top 10.
Yeah, exactly. I think everything points to him. You know, if he's able to get even like a 1A role in that backfield with Russell Wilson, with the QB upgrade and everything, the coaching staff upgrade. I'm looking at RB9 and I'm thinking, well, this is irresistible. I would take, in a vacuum, I would take Javonte over Alvin Kamara. I would take him over Najee Harris, for instance. So
that's the one I was going to throw out. Najee Harris going two running back spots ahead of him. Alvin Kamara going just ahead of him, and Dalvin Cook the cohort, and then Austin Eckler as well, just right ahead. So I actually think, yeah, like he's perfectly fit inside those in that cohort. The more we talk about it, I do think like you can make a strong argument, especially over someone like Najee Harris. Who, like, it's not like Najee Harris has this elite, you know, receiving efficiency profile, right? God. He can draw a lot of targets in that offense, but it's not like Alvin Kamara, where you expect him to be his team's number one receiver if Michael Thomas doesn't come back. Doesn't have a great offensive line. They made improvements in the offseason, but it's not world beating. And it's not an offense that's going to put him in the red zone so many times a game. He's half checks a lot of boxes, where Javonte Williams really crushes some boxes. And his offense now has Russell Wilson.
You guys have clearly done nothing to dissuade me from this. Go ahead, Denny.
No, man, I think that there's a case, and I think that there will be the case will be stronger as time goes on. There will be a case for Javonte as a top three or four running back pick.
Denny, player number two for you. Who you got?
So this one is, I feel a little bit like I'm cheating here, but I'm going to say Justin Jefferson. Unlike most people, I like Justin Jefferson. it's easy to like Justin Jefferson, but his peripherals last year were off the charts. Domination of air yards, of target share. Everything points to him being like a supreme alpha wideout. And now in an offense that will actually try to use him the way that you should use that kind of pass catcher, right? He has succeeded despite his team, despite his head coach, despite his offense. And now he gets a chance, I think, to shine as a dominant receiver in the Minnesota offense. So I do think that there's an easy case to make for him as the second receiver off the board this year.
Yeah, I feel like for you to come to this argument saying you're drafting him all the time, you have to say he's wide receiver two or better, right? Because he probably goes 3, 4, 5 as sort of the block where he falls. I think you have to say you rank him as like wide receiver two or better for this to come in true. And you did at the end. So that's, I think, what I wanted to hear.
Right. I mean, I'm okay reaching for him if that's what it takes. I feel like his obviously floor is great, but the ceiling, I think, is just out of this world. Tremendous.
Let's face it. You're basically making him a likely first rounder in a fantasy draft, right? I mean, you've got to take him in the top.
Yeah, you're making like a top six pick, probably top six, seven, to ensure that you get him to be the guy you take every draft.
Right. First two seasons, averaging 98 catches, 1,508 yards, and 8.5 touchdowns. Yeah. Don't walk away from any fantasy draft, I don't think, feeling uneasy about having Justin Jefferson as your number one guy. It's probably a pretty good feeling.
He led the league in what's called WOPR, WOPR, which is a metric that looks at a combination of a player's share of targets and his share of air yards in an offense. And it does a really good job. WOPR does a really good job of showing us who is and can be dominant given the chance. And Jefferson, just, you talk about checking boxes, he checks them all.
WOPR doesn't really sound like what it is. You know what I mean?
It's good. No, because like a high whopper is a guy who gets a lot of targets and they're like 10, 11, 12 yards downfield. They're big, juicy, they're fatty, they're meaty, good targets. They result in fantasy points that kind of drip out of the side of your mouth and bite into them. And that's what I assume a whopper is, though. I don't know if I've ever had
one. Whopper is also the name of the genocidal computer in the 1983 movie War Games.
War Games. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Did not see us going there.
They made movies in 1983.
They in 1983 they had 4 movies, and that was one of them.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Goonies? No, Goonies wasn't out yet. We didn't have that yet.
No,
Ghostbusters hadn't come out. Okay, moving on to Kyle, your second player for April.
So I will go with what you alluded to earlier. Breece Hall looking at underdog ADP, grinding the mock. First of all, grinding the mock's ADP, which is his actual NFL real life ADP of 44. I don't think his fantasy ADP is even that high. He's usually going around slightly ahead of Leonard Fournette around that like RB 19, 20 ish range. And we see it. That's what I alluded to. We see it year in, year out. People are, I don't know if they're just concerned about not knowing where a player lands. I honestly just kind of think it's a lack of paying attention, which like, I don't blame you. You don't have to pay attention, yeah. But while you are not paying attention to the NFL draft coming in, I am. And I know Breece Hall is, I would say he is the tier below the Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley level of prospect in that Jonathan Taylor tier. Jonathan Taylor was one of the best runners we've seen come out, but he wasn't a prolific pass catcher. Where on the other hand, Breece Hall actually has really good pass catching chops to back up his grinding the mocks ADP of 44. I think he'll probably go. He could go to Buffalo. That's the, you know, that's what vaults him into the first round. More likely than not, I think he goes to the top of the second round, sort of where we saw, you know, a Dalvin Cook, a Jonathan Taylor go. And he was just so immensely productive in college. Over 3,000 rushing yards in his final two seasons, 591 touches in those two seasons, at least 20 receptions in all three college seasons. That's great. It was at Iowa State. And I, you know, you see him and you see the production, and you think, oh, well, he's basically just David Montgomery, right? You know, it's easy parallel to draw. But then he goes to the combine and blows the combine out of the water. That's the one thing you watch David Montgomery, and you're like, yeah, David Montgomery is a guy who can handle 250, even 300 touches, but he doesn't really give you much more with those. He does exactly what you expect. I don't think Breece Hall is that guy, and his combine backs that up. You watch him run, he looks more explosive, a little harder to bring down than David Montgomery, and then his combine, incredible. A 4.39 40 plus 94th percentile burst metrics, the vert and the long. He looks like the workload of David Montgomery was someone who can break long runs and break off tackles, and that's something we don't really see a ton with David Montgomery. That's what keeps David Montgomery in like the third, fourth round at best, and not being a second round pick, because he gets second round, even first round fantasy volume. Breece Hall has that level of upside in his range of outcomes, but he can actually do more with it. People are either not knowing, maybe, or just scared to see where he lands. I'm excited to see where he lands because I think his floor is so high and his ceiling. Like, if he goes to Buffalo, we're drafting him as a first round back.
I'm glad that Pat Daugherty's not here, by the way, to hear you talk about DeMont Nation that way, Kyle, his guy. And by the way, Breece Hall did have a Saquon Barkley-esque combine. I mean, you said he's a tier below him as a prospect, but he did put up some Barkley-esque numbers at the combine. And you mentioned the Bills. Is there another team there, Kyle, like when you make this pick, where you another destination that would be appealing in terms of Breece Hall's real-life team?
Yeah, Bills have to be the top one. Looking past them, I think I know one spot, like grinding the mocks ADP hasn't perfectly fit with Atlanta, which I actually think if Atlanta is any bit better this year, which I'm not entirely sure happens, he at least gets a ton of their carries, because ideally Cordarrelle Patterson does the thing he did early in the season where he gets 7-8 carries kind of max, and then also 5 or 6 targets. That leaves this massive hole that they tried to fill it with Mike Davis. They could be 200 plus carries. I think that cuts his targets back a little bit, you know, working alongside Cordarrelle Patterson. But we could also see Cordarrelle Patterson continue to push towards that wide receiver gap that Atlanta doesn't have a gap at wide receiver. They just don't have
a
roster spot at wide receiver yet. It's nothing. So I think that could be a lot of touches. It wouldn't be the best offense, but we know like Christian McCaffrey never played on a good offense. He has yet to play on a good offense. Touches are the most important. Then we love to get touches on good offenses. So I think that's one that lines up with his ADP, grinding the mocks ADP well, and would get him at least a lot of carries.
I like that you had to say that, say that twice. Mike Davis. They tried to fill the hole with Mike Davis. Because it's inexplicable that a journeyman, you know, running back was going to come in and be the answer. Sorry, Matt, but that was never going to work.
No, it's all right. It's okay. I'm well prepared for all of this. By the way, Breece Hall, as a Falcons fan, that would be absolutely music to my ears. As a real life Falcons fan, in terms of fantasy, it would wreck one of my players. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. My second guy. This is a guy who we all know was just a league-winning force down the stretch last year. Amon-Ra St. Brown, over his last 6 games, had 51 catches, 560 yards, 5 touchdowns, added 61 yards and a touchdown on the ground. I mean, when you look at what the Lions have done, they added DJ Chark, but that doesn't really scare me off. I guess the question is, and I'm going to throw this your way, Denny, do you like Amon-Ra at an ADP of around 50, which is what it appears to be right now on Underdog?
I think it's reasonable. Like, I'm not super excited about it. Because, you know, his target volume has and will go down. It will decrease with the return of Swift, DeAndre Swift as an underneath pass catcher, a good underneath pass catcher in a conservative Lions offense. There were a lot of numbers pointing to Detroit as one of the most conservative teams. In other words, when they could, in the rare occurrence when Detroit could establish the run, they established the run hard. So I think some improvement from the Lions in general would be bad for St. Brown, who really thrived off of just unholy volume over the last, six, 7 weeks of the season. You know, just when you thought that it couldn't get more ridiculous, it did. And not taking away anything from him. He's a really good slot receiver. I think it's fair. I'm not super excited about that ADP.
Yeah, go ahead, Kyle. I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I kind of echo the same thing. They also didn't have TJ Hawkinson. It's not an offense. Right. Like, I don't really see them blowing up. Like, I don't see him having a 12, 14 touchdown game or season in his range of outcomes. Also game, though, wouldn't probably
That's
happen.
That's not likely.
Because the offense, just to me, under Dan Campbell, is quite uninspiring. The thing you're drawing to Amon-Ra St. Brown for is crazy target share. Right. They'll get TJ Hawkinson back. They'll get DeAndre Swift back. Wouldn't be surprised for them to take another. They probably really should take another wide receiver in the draft. Won't happen, at least with their first pick, though it could come at number 32. They also pick almost immediately again in the second round. So I think there's probably still more receiver potential coming in the draft, plus Hawkinson, plus Swift, plus not a great offense. That I think another one where I think the market's probably correct on this, because players who do what Amon-Ra St. Brown did as a rookie very often go on to success, because it's very hard to come into the NFL and so quickly break out, even if it only happened more really down the stretch. Just putting up those kinds of numbers immediately is a really good, especially at receiver, where, you know, age adjusted production is very important, is a really good indicator. It's kind of with Terry McLaurin. Like, I really wasn't interested in Terry McLaurin coming out of college. He didn't have great college numbers, and Amon-Ra St. Brown's were probably even better. I really wasn't that high on him, and he did so much as a rookie that it changes the prior on him. That is the good news. The bad news, I think, is that it's the Lions and he'll face more target competition, which is why I think I'll probably draft him. If I find him in his ADP or lower, I'm not going to be the one who reaches on him.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, I think strangely, those of us drafting Amon-Ra St. Brown are actually hoping for 17 games of Jared Goff based on the way we know Jared Goff likes to target his receivers. It seems like kind of a perfect match, Danny. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, for sure. And that's why, like, any talk of like DJ Chark, you know, putting a dent in St. Brown's target share, right, that's not happening. DJ Chark signed with a team that will have him running wind sprints down the sideline for the entire season. Okay, look, it's good for Chark. He's going to stay in great shape, you know, physically. He'll get a lot of cardio on Sundays. He'll never see the ball, and then he'll probably end up with another team in 2023.
All right, we have three more players still to go. First, we're going to take a very quick break. The 2022 MLB season is underway, and NBC Sports Edge is giving our listeners a special offer. Get 22% off an annual Edge Plus subscription when you use promo code BASES22. Get expert insight and access to tools that will give you an edge against your competition at one low price. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/EdgePlus. Use promo code BASES22 at checkout to save big this season. Three players left, one player each. Denny, back up to you.
Yes. My third player is Michael Pittman, who is going as the wide receiver 24 at the moment, as of this morning. Who knows? It could have changed by now. And that's after guys like Adam Thielen and Brandon Cooks, which, you know, I obviously, by mentioning Pittman as someone I'm bullish on, I would take him over both of those guys. You know, Pittman had some success last year despite Carson Wentz being kind of a disaster as far as, you know, completion rate over expected, adjusted EPA per dropback, all that points to Wentz being very inefficient. The Colts were you know, afraid at some point late in the season, afraid to throw the ball. Like, they desperately just never wanted to throw it. They wanted to just hand it to Jonathan Taylor, rightfully so, as Jonathan Taylor is obviously excellent. But I think, you know, Matt Ryan, for all of his limitations as a 36-year-old quarterback, by the way, yeah, can we stop calling Matt Ryan old? He's 30. He's 36. Okay,
he's a young man.
He's old.
He's a decrepit. Young man.
No. Decrepit.
Some of us.
Get him out of here.
Some of us were 36 several years ago. Anyway, yes. I think Matt Ryan, by all indications, is an upgrade for the pass catchers in this offense, including, you know, Pat Daugherty and I talked about Nyheim Hines getting a boost from Matt Ryan. and his his predilection for dumping it off to running backs. Anyway, Pittman gets that. I think wide receiver 24 is probably near his floor. You know, we're talking about low end wide receiver 2. We talked about Whopper earlier, not the computer, but the stat. He was 16th among receivers in Whopper last year, in a run heavy conservative, pretty bad Colts offense. I think things are looking up for Pittman.
Yeah, looking up is fair. I do wonder what extent last year their poor pass rate over expected, which obviously wasn't over, especially in the red zone. They were like a bottom five team in pass rate over expectation in the red zone, bottom 10 through full 17 weeks, entire length of the field. I wonder what of that was Frank Reich versus Frank Reich plus seeing Carson Wentz for a few weeks. I do think, to me, a lot of that stuff does ultimately fall on the coach. He went to bat for Carson Wentz. I don't think Carson Wentz was terrible enough that you only run the football, right? I think Jonathan Taylor was good enough that you just want to keep running the football. I think their pass rate comes up, but I don't know how much it really even approaches league average. That's kind of the one caveat, though. He should have, like you said, he should have an immense whopper in a team with really like very few options, even if they... Whopper is a real stat. He didn't just make this up.
This guy's going to have a huge whopper this year. Just wait.
And that's what people are drafting. You know, we're looking for big whoppers, and Michael Pittman has one.
By the way,
I can't help that the stat sounds funny. It is a stat.
I know.
Didn't just make it up. It's been around for years.
I know. I was only laughing because I'm a child. By the way, Matt Ryan. This is not. I don't have a stat to back this up, but is a guy.
You don't have a whopper to back.
I don't have a whopper to back this up, but is a guy who I think in the right scheme can still really thrive. And if you're talking about a much better offensive line and a much better ground game, Ryan could really be lights out. And you know, play action, Pittman. I could see a mind meld happening there. So I'm buying in.
Yeah. Also, the you know, something I think that is not discussed quite enough. I've heard it. You know, in some spaces here. But is the fact that Ryan is going to get a huge upgrade in offensive line and in pass protection in Indianapolis. And for a guy with cement in his shoes, that's important.
Yeah, also getting an upgrade at receiver. We talk about how much like getting an upgrade at quarterback matters for Michael Pittman. But Matt Ryan's stats should also look better because he has Michael Pittman, because outside of maybe like 7 games, right, with Calvin Ridley, something like that, he easily would have been that team's best receiver. So there will be a back and forth chicken and egg and good way thing. Oh, did Michael Pittman make Matt Ryan better? Matt Ryan make Michael Pittman better? They're both getting upgrades in this situation.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and let you talk about Kyle Pitts that way. But overall, the offense, though.
Well, they have Mo Alie-Cox, though, who would be a great impression of. If you've looked at his height and speed and never any of his production metrics, would be a great replacement.
Oh, by the way, Mo Alie-Cox is right. Doesn't he look like a monster every time he every time he gets the football?
Massive dude.
Yeah. A separate.
And he's really efficient. They just play him like 8 snaps a game.
Yeah. I'm wondering about that. I'm wondering if there's a reason for that.
I'm sure there isn't. I'm sure it's just happenstance.
No,
I'm sure Jack Doyle somewhere in his contract said he needed to play 80% of the snaps.
I think there's an alternate universe where Mo Alie-Cox is a star, former college basketball player. I'm all in here. I'm all in. Let's rip up the format. Let's do a tight 15 minutes on Mo Alie-Cox right now.
Hey, you know I'm always game for that. For a tight end.
I do love Mo Alie-Cox. Yeah. I could go for it, honestly.
Kyle, we're down to your third and final player here.
So, I will admit, in the first two, I felt confident about the players as talents. I think Breece Hall's very good. I think Leonard Fournette, I was extremely wrong about as of like 18 months ago or something like that. I don't know if I'm right about this player being good. That would be Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones has potential to be good. Has he been good recently? I'd say no, not really. But has he been... Look, being good isn't all life is about. And for Daniel Jones, it's not what life has been about for the past 2 years. But his team is terrible and run by awful coaches. He's had a terrible... Like, PFF's offensive line, pass blocking line at number 30 last year. They bring in right guard Mark Glowinski from the Colts, starting right guard for years for the Colts, and I believe Seattle before that. I think you cannot find a mock draft that doesn't have them adding a right tackle, and Andrew Thomas at left tackle looked really good last year. They're not going to have a great line, but will they have a bottom three line? I don't think so, and he's worked with terrible lines for years. Are they going to have great coaching? I really do think they're going to have great coaching. I mean, we've seen him play with Freddie Kitchens at the end of last year, Jason Garrett before that, Mike Shula before that. And, oh, well, was the head coach controlling things? No, Joe Judge, a special teams coach, was not controlling things. Now he gets Josh Allen's offensive coordinator. Last year, the Bills had the third highest pass rate over expectation. They were also top 10 in pass rate over expectation in the red zone. And part of the reason they were running a little more in the red zone is because they were running with Josh Allen, who is second in red zone carries among quarterbacks, second in carries inside the five. If you just give him that role and he's not very good in it, it is still a boon for his, I believe, QB22-ish ADP. He's one of the QBs that you can take outside the top 20 that even if it's just rushing production, which he was top 10 min six starts in rushing yards per game last year, even if you just take his rushing production, give him a larger role in the red zone and overall more passing volume, that should get him past 22. And that doesn't bake in any real chance that he improves after having played with terrible coaching throughout his entire career, and he'll probably have his best offensive line he's had. His weapons should be better as well, because we only saw a few games from Kadarius Toney. Kenny Galladay was banged up all year. Saquon Barkley, Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard, none of them got to play together. I don't think they have a world beaters group, but when like Cody Core ends up getting out there, or John Ross ends up getting out there as your starting receiver in week like 12, something has gone horribly awry. So everything around him is improving. I don't know if that means he improves, but his ADP doesn't seem to account for any possibility of that.
I hate that you're right. Like I
hate it too. Look, I don't love being right all the time, which is why I'm wrong so much.
When I saw that you were going to mention Daniel Jones as one of your three guys today, I was like, all right, I gotta gear up. I'm pushing back on this hard. And I looked into it. You know, the interns looked into it very strongly, and we did not see anything that would suggest that he's being overdrafted. I mean, he's barely being drafted, and he can be productive both as a passer and as a rusher. Like, you know, that we can't overstate that appeal, that rushing Konami code appeal that Daniel Jones can bring. I've talked several times on the Tuesday podcast with Roto Pat about how bullish I am on Daboll and the new Giants and offense and everything. And I never mentioned Daniel Jones, and I guess I need to start doing that, because if I like the offense and I like the changes and I like the weapons surrounding, then I have to say, you know, Daniel Jones is, you know, I hate to use this term again, looking up, but he is. And another thing we can't overstate is how bad the Giants coaching staff was last year and how bad their game planning was. I mean, just I know this is not directly impacting fantasy. Well, I guess maybe it is. Have we ever seen in all our years watching football a worse 2-minute drill team than the Giants last year? It looked as if they had never done it, as if they had never practiced it. They had never heard of it. Like the basics of like passing the ball and then spiking it and then running another play and conserving timeouts and trying to get a score. Looks like they had never done it. So I think that just speaks to how bad the coaching was in New York.
I mean, this is a real thing that happened, right? The Giants did the 3rd-and-9 QB sneak from like their own five-ish, right? That like that was, I think it was later in the year. Like these guys didn't have any business coaching, and Brian Daboll, Josh Allen gets tons of credit for turning himself around as well, but it can't go understated that we saw maybe the greatest quarterback turnaround from Josh Allen being this like scattershot, big arm, prospecty guy to hyper elite, just one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL. He gets tons of credit for that, but Daboll has to get some of the credit for what he's done with Josh Allen. I don't think he does that with Daniel Jones, but does he tune up his efficiency? I don't know, 10, 15% plus give him that rushing work? I think that's enough alone to pay off his ADP.
I think we have it seared into our brains, the image of Daniel Jones tripping on that breakaway run, like famously. Yeah. And it's like his iconic running is like a joke. But I mean, he had 95 yards on the ground in week two. I mean, this is a potentially legitimate weapon, right? Waiting to be unleashed. Like, that's not an overstatement, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, he's a top 10 rushing quarterback year in, year out, and just in terms of rushing yards per game, he gets in the end zone. Like, I don't think he's Lamar Jackson, right? But just getting to that 300, maybe even 400 yardage threshold, like we saw Josh Allen completely pop off as a rusher last year, but just getting to 300 yards, 5 touchdowns, something like that, is really the difference between, like, it's like an extra, like, touchdown and a half or something in terms of passing touchdowns. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the Konami code.
All right, my last guy. You know, I feel earlier we were being a little hard on Matt Ryan in terms of age. I feel like, you know, there's a stigma attached to being...
No, we were being fair. He's old.
Over 30, and don't even talk about over 40. We would never even discuss that here. So my last guy is actually the oldest guy we'll be talking about here. That's 31-year-old Cordarrelle Patterson, who we mentioned earlier. Now, we obviously know he had that kind of that breakout season, nearly 1,200 yards from scrimmage, 11 touchdowns, but he faded down the stretch. We all remember that, too. The workload took a major hit. But I mean, we've already talked about this. You look at this Falcons team right now, before the draft, there's a serious lack of weapons, and they will probably add an early round receiver. They might add Breece Hall, as we've talked about. But as of right now, as this stands, Patterson is at worst the number two option for this team. And he strikes me as a guy who could have some big weeks early on in the season at the very worst. And his ADP is outside the top 100 right now. So I don't know. It just feels like you're not paying up at all for what happened last year. And it's not all upside, but there's not a lot to lose here, Denny.
I see him as more of a floor option, I think. He's going, it looks like, in 12-team leagues, going in the eighth round. But like, I'm looking at other guys going around him. I guess it depends on, you know, can you draft him as a running back or a wide receiver? How is he listed? He's listed as a wide receiver here from what I'm looking at. But, you know, he's going around guys like St. Brown, Gabriel Davis, Michael Gallup, Allen Robinson, the aforementioned Allen Robinson. I'd have a hard time going, you know, going with Patterson over those players. There was a point last year late in the season where Patterson was very open about the rigors and the toll of taking, you know, taking runs up the middle. And he said, it's different than playing receiver. Like, I'm getting my butt kicked out there every week. I'm not used to it. Arthur Smith eventually said, we have to reel back his rushing role because he's not used to it. And like, he's not built for it. You know, he didn't come into the season conditioned for it. I don't think that we can look at his rushing attempts last year and say, okay, pencil that in for 2022. That kind of freaks me out.
To me, on the other hand, I almost want that. I don't want to see what we saw from Cordarrelle Patterson at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Like that, even not like the last game, because he got like four carries in the final game. But basically from like, it was like 1 week after their bye, they basically just started like pounding him into dust. They stopped using him as a receiver. Right. His highest games in terms of routes run were all before week 10. After that, he started averaging like one or two catches a game, wasn't getting a ton of work as a pass catcher because they were, it was maybe just because they were done trying to do the Mike Davis thing. Like, I guess you have to be Mike Davis. That was not a good way to use him. He isn't built for it. And also, he wasn't particularly efficient at it. He averaged like 3.5 yards per carry. His final six games would have had him pace for far under, a bit under 1,000 yards from scrimmage total, not just, you know, rushing yards. So he didn't really look like anything we'd be that interested. He wasn't the efficient guy we thought. He wasn't getting tons of targets like we want from a running back, if you can even call him that. He's listed as a running back some places. I think Underdog has him as running back. I'm sure some places don't. You need to see the Cordarrelle Patterson we saw from like weeks 1 through 8. And given how drastically they changed his role at the end, I just think there's a ton of downside that they don't quite understand how to use him. Maybe because it's hard to understand, but you did it right at the beginning. Right. They should have just stopped running the ball as much. Like, there's no quota of runs you have to get to. You can take the Mike Davis carries and do nothing with them. They disappear. Just throw them in the garbage and keep using Cordarrelle Patterson as a hyper-efficient, like, Debo Samuel-level hybrid player. You can just keep doing that. I don't know if Arthur Smith knows that that's an option.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, again, with all three of the players I brought here, I was open to being swayed one way or the other, in particular probably with Amon-Ra St. Brown and Cordarrelle Patterson. And yeah, that's fair. I mean, you guys make me see the downside here as well. But I mean, again, he is going relatively late. I mean, I saw an Underdog outside the top 100, close to 110, but Denny, looks like you saw something else elsewhere.
Yeah, so I guess it's mine. What I'm seeing is 85. So outside the 100, top 100, I guess I'd be more apt to look at Patterson. Yeah, Arthur Smith is a coach that lives to establish, and I don't think that's going to change. And I hate being down on CPAT because, you know, he's such a joyous, you know, a breath of fresh air in the NFL. And the way that he like urged the Falcons to sign him, to re-sign him, like, right. that, you know, he's an endearing guy. He seems like a good guy. I don't know. I don't know if I can say, yes, I'm hammering CPAT. Remember last year, he wasn't drafted. Okay. Like, right. That's part of his appeal last year was like, You got him off the waiver.
Well, I had to get Brian Hill or whoever, Quadri Olison or something to back up Mike Davis. I had to get those guys on the roster.
Only established the runs Pat Thorman was in on CPAT before the season, and he deserves endless credit for that. And wow. I'm supremely jealous of that whole thing.
Yeah, it was almost like when you picked him up last year, you kind of did so sheepishly. Like, I think I'm going to do this. Like,
yeah.
I hope it's okay with you guys, fellow league mates, but I'm going to pick him up. I guess to the point that you guys are making, the perfect world version of Cordarrelle Patterson in 2022, if they did use him more as a pass catcher, he can still be quite good. But we're worried that we don't necessarily trust them to do the right thing there, and they might just slam him into a brick wall a lot. So that's the fear.
Yeah, that would be my argument. I mean, we saw he had the highest average defenders in the box per carry last year. And from watching them, it looks like most of that came towards the end of the year when they tried to play him as Mike Davis. And Next Gen Stats tracked him as the highest stack box rate as well. Like, he was just a between the tackles grinder. And why would you do that to Cordarrelle Patterson? Because he is super fun to watch when you use him the right way. It took like a decade for a coach to finally figure it out. And then that coach forgot after 8 weeks.
Yeah, good times. All right. Well, that's the end of our nine players here for April. Anything you guys would like to mention on NBC Sports Edge before we go?
I have a piece that I wrote recently on Tua in his first two seasons in the NFL and whether we can point to him as a potential long-term starter or a guy who will soon be a journeyman. I still don't really have the answer, but I looked into a lot of numbers and looked at the fantasy impact of Tyreek Hill joining the Miami offense. So you can check that out on the site.
Me and Tyler Fornes have a series of draft needs and prospect fits coming out. It's like two a week until the draft. So just, go to the website. You'll be able to find it. By the time you listen to this, a new one will have come out that has not come out yet. And I have a USFL breakdown coming out, probably coming out in two parts, still waiting for DraftKings to get their pricing up, but also probably have some betting notes and just a ton of player notes in there that needed to be broken up into two pieces. So really what you all came here for was just the USFL breakdown, and you'll be getting it.
Check all that out. And I just want to, before we go, guys, I just want to remind you of something that was said earlier. My new words to live by: being good isn't what life's all about. I just want us to, if we take away nothing.
Amen, brother. Amen.
Take away nothing else here today. That is going to do it for us. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Take a minute to rate and review us as well. Want to say thanks to everyone for listening and watching live with us. Kyle, Denny, thanks to both of you guys. I'll talk to you soon.